The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
From the record of Dongshan in a slightly different translation. Just when Dongshan was about to depart, he said, "If in the future someone happens to ask whether I can describe the master's truth or not, how should I answer them?" After a long pause, Yunyan said, "Just this is it." Dongshan sighed. Then Yunyan said, "Worthy Liang, now that you have taken on this great affair, you must consider it carefully." Dongshan continued to experience doubt. Later, as he crossed a stream, he saw his reflection in the water and was awakened to Yunyan's meaning. He then composed his verse. "Avoid seeking elsewhere, for that's far from the self. Now I travel alone, everywhere I meet it. Now it's exactly me. Now I'm not it. It must thus be understood to merge with thusness." So I wanted to talk a little bit about a theme that ran through Dongshan's life, and this story about his great experience crossing the stream. And I think the other translation, it might have said river. Some of us were talking recently about how we all imagine this body of water differently. Some of us imagine a huge, roaring, rushing river, and we have to get in and wade up to our hips to find our way across it. And some of us, maybe a little drought-stricken stream that we just pass over. But of course, there has to be enough water so that we can look down and see ourselves in it. And this seeing ourselves in the water, it's not just about a reflection, of course. It's about seeing ourselves, our many selves, our interior selves, all the constructed selves that we push together and pull together and duct tape together to make a me. All of these selves are continually reflected everywhere we go. Everywhere, without exception. When we feel angry at someone, or if we feel hurt by someone, then that's a sort of a cooperation of constructed realities of the ego, of the self, clashing together. Really, it's just something that arises. David and I like to say, when we're angry with each other, there's anger in the field. There's anger in the field of awareness, you might say, or there's hurt, or there's sadness, or there's fear, or happiness, or joy, or delight. All of the emotions that arise, the combination of physical sensations that we put together into some kind of meaning for ourselves, and then construct a reality that fits, ignoring almost everything we encounter if it doesn't fit into our constructed narrative, in this wonderful capacity that human beings have called confirmation bias. If I say that I'm a terrible Zen student and I can prove it to you because I have a long list of things that prove that I'm a terrible Zen student, I don't sit enough, and when I do sit, I'm in pain and my mind is all over the place. That's the confirmation bias at work, because there's a lot of other things going on. Everyone right now listening to this talk has made some commitment to the way. Some of these talks will be listened to by people we don't even know on recordings on our podcast. Who knows what you listeners are feeling and thinking and experiencing as you hear this talk from deep within a sesshin. Halfway through the weekend part of our sesshin, which is traditionally the deepest, darkest time, the most difficult, the time when everything's accumulated into, oh, I can't stand it anymore. Or maybe it's accumulated into some great lightness and presence and spaciousness. All of these things are constructed narratives. The reality of our lives is now it's this, now it's this, now it's this. Just this is it. This is what Yunyan says to his student Dongshan when he asks him, what is the essence of your teaching? What shall I say when people ask me? Just this is it. A powerful, powerful statement. If we bring it in close to our hearts, if we see all of the constructed narratives for what they are, just a bunch of things strung together to make meaning. It's important to know that Zen practice is not about tearing apart those constructed narratives, extinguishing them, throwing them away. It's simply seeing them, recognizing them, being present to the construction business, which all of us are very invested in, because all of these constructed narratives have protected us since we were small children, protected us in some mysterious way from what at the time we thought was harm, and which may indeed have been great harm. Everything that we construct has a benevolent intention. Everything is the Dharma, even the story about yourself that you're no good. Or I think some of you may have a story about yourself that you're wonderful. Same construction business, not better, not worse. When Dongshan was a little boy, he encountered Buddhism through one of his tutors. It seems to me that there in the 9th century, he must have been someone who was fairly well-to-do, came from a well-to-do family, because he had a tutor as a child. And the tutor taught him about Buddhism and taught him about the Heart Sutra. And he said a wonderful thing as a child to his tutor. He said, I just don't get it. It says there's no eye, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. But when I put my hand up to my face, I feel a nose. I feel a mouth, I have eyes, I have ears. His tutor didn't know what to do, so he sent him off to study with a Zen teacher, a great teacher named Li Mo. And that was his first teacher who he took ordination with. And then he went on to study with many people. He went on a pilgrimage, and we've heard a bit from David's wonderful talk yesterday about some of the encounters that he had again and again. When he was with his next to last teacher, Guishan. Guishan said to him at one point, you need to study with somebody else. He was sending him away. And he said, Dongshan said to Guishan, is there anyone else of your generation whom you respect and who can explain these matters to me? Because he was still struggling. You can hear him from the time he was a little boy. I don't get it. This doesn't make sense. Show me, a kind of wonderful spirit, which someone pointed out yesterday in our Dharma dialogue. So Guishan said, go to Li Ling in Yu County, where there are stone houses strung together. That's a reference to the monastery of Yunyan, which was a bunch of caves in some translations, or maybe stone houses in, this is Andy Ferguson's translation. Go there and you'll find this man of the way. And here's what Guishan says to Dongshan. And I really want to focus on this line for a few moments. He says, if you can search the grass and face the wind, then you'll certainly hold him in esteem. And there's a note that searching the grass and facing the wind means if you can bear his teaching methods. I really tickles me to hear this. What, 1100 years ago, is that right? My math is correct, maybe? I don't know. But a long time ago, teachers and students found a way to have a relationship. It's quite mysterious. And not everyone can bear the teachings of their teacher. It's too much. It flies in the face of all these dearly beloved constructed narratives of the self. We don't want to hear that. Leave me alone. I'm fine just as I am. And yet, of course, we've come to study Zen. So there's an implicit contract. But not everyone is ready to take those teachings. And you know for yourself, I have had this experience with my teachers. I'm sure you've had it with those of us and other teachers that you've encountered before you came to Boundless Way, that sometimes they just piss you off. They say exactly the wrong thing that, of course, it's touching the constructed, the dearly beloved constructed narratives, and that's the worst thing ever. Sometimes the teacher is skillful and sometimes the teacher isn't skillful, but it almost doesn't matter because it's the relationship that matters. Being able to bear a certain kind of intimacy, a certain kind of exposing oneself to another human being in a way that is completely different from any other kind of relationship. Even your beloved partner, if you have one, even your parents, your sisters and brothers, your dear friends, even if you go to psychotherapy and counseling, it's not like any of those relationships. Here we sit down with each other, and at some point, the student realizes the emptiness of their narratives. And then there comes a moment when they, you, can sit in the presence of another human being who is also seen through their narratives. Doesn't mean that they've gotten rid of them, because that's another matter, maybe a matter for psychotherapy, but for the being present to the way things are, the noisy voices in the head, the convincing stories of inadequacy or sometimes of superadequacy, all of them about you, I, me, mine. And the Buddha said the main thing that he was teaching was to help people to see through I, me, and mine, to help people deconstruct, he said, the house of the self. He was a Hindu, and so Hinduism believed very strongly in something called Atman, which is the great super self that all of us are part of and that we'll all melt into at some point after many, many rebirths. But the Buddha was a wild rebel, and he taught that there is no Atman, and he affixed the prefix an to the word Atman, Anatman, Anatta in Pali, Anatman in Sanskrit, which means no self, no great self, no abiding self, no self that is concrete and can be demonstrated and shown to be here. A self concept fed by experiences that is continuously changing and is made up of millions and millions and millions of parts. You might notice that one of the things I love about Boundless Way is that there's three transmitted teachers and many, many teachers in training. And so when you go into Doksan, you get to be with the teacher in front of you. And you may notice that you're not the same person from teacher to teacher. This is a very interesting thing to be awake to. It's a real opportunity. And certainly we know that different circumstances call us forward in different ways. When we're maybe at a large party, remember those? way before the pandemic. Maybe some of you have risked your life and health and the health of others and gone to large parties. I don't know. I know people who have. But that the way you are in a large party may be nothing like the way you are at home with your cat or your dog or your friends, your children, your spouse. Different selves always arising. And this is what we're looking into here. There's a little preface to the story of Dongshan leaving Yunyan that David alluded to yesterday, and I just want to read a little bit of that to you too. after Dongshan received all these teachings from Yunyan, and he did receive many, many teachings before this final dialogue, Yunyan said, "Where are you going?" In other words, we've had this amazing, unusual connection, heart to heart, mind to mind, body to body, unlike any other. Where are you going? It's a great koan question. Where will you go is actually a koan in one of our koan collections. After everything has dropped away, where will you go? And in a way, maybe Yunyan is asking something similar. And Dongshan says, although I'm leaving you, I don't know where I'll end up. A pretty straightforward description of the human condition. We think, I'm going to this place, but we don't know what it'll be like when we get there, or even if we'll get there. We can't even be guaranteed a morning and an evening, but we make our plans. We say, I'm going to Sachin. We say, I'm going to the bathroom. We say, I'm going to sleep. But what happens? What happens is completely unpredictable. And yet we worry about it. We become anxious about it. That's one of the great characteristics of the human brain. We can think ahead, create fantasy scenarios about the future. If you're really honest with yourself, how many of them have ever come true in the very particular ways you've feared or imagined? Moment after moment, even here at Sachin, you think, oh, it's the morning. I have to listen to a Dharma talk. Then there's going to be a Dharma dialogue. Oh, I hate those. And then my legs hurt so much. And then it doesn't turn out to be that way. It's a surprise. Lunch is coming. Oh, I'm thinking about lunch. This is great. Whoa, I can't wait to see what sauce is thought up by our wonderful cook. It's not what we imagined. Ever. And every bite is different. Physiologically, only the first bite can be fully tasted, according to some brain research. Every next bite gets less and less vivid because we're beginning already to construct narratives about it. Part of the way of Zen is to be fully in the vividness of that first taste. To make everything the first taste. And to do that, we don't have to put in much effort. We just have to see the narratives for what they are, be awake to them. Awareness is its own action. We just don't have to meddle, that's all. Being with things as they arise. So Yunyan asked, oh, you're not going to Hunan? And Dongshan says, no, I'm not. And Yunyan says, are you going home? No, I'm not. Sooner or later, you'll return. And Dongshan says, when the master has an abode, then I'll return. There's something very touching to me about that. When you've settled in someplace, when you are a person who is consistent and reliable, maybe I'll come back. But no one settles in. The true abode, the refuge that we take, is in Buddha nature, in the Dharma, the way things are constantly moving and changing, where there's no self construct that can be relied on, where there's nothing that can be relied on. And the Sangha, the ever-changing presence of other human beings who've decided to do this thing, whose selves are also continuously changing, not just in body, but in heart and mind. Yunyan said, if you leave, it will be difficult to see one another again. So sweet when I think about the people that I've studied with, the people I've practiced with. Four of us in this room started out in Zen, more or less, together with the same teacher. I studied with him for 20 years. He's dead now. He was not a person who got it all together in his life, I have to say. And yet his Dharma was amazing for me in the moment when I needed it. In the many moments over 20 years when I needed it. And when I left him, I thought, I will never see you again. But that wasn't true. Everyone we've ever encountered, the beloved people who have died and left us, they're still here. In our memory minds, in our physical bodies as sense memories, we never actually leave each other. So I just want to end with the story of Dongshan's death, starting with him as a little boy and then going all the way to the, in quotes, end. When he was dying, he had his attendants help him to shave his head, to bathe, and get dressed. He then had the bell rung to summon the monks so that he could bid them all farewell. He appeared to have passed away, and the monks began wailing piteously without let up. Suddenly, Dongshan opened his eyes and he said, "Homeless monks aren't attached to things. That is their authentic practice. Why lament an arduous life and a pitiful death?" Dongshan then instructed the temple director to organize a delusion banquet. The monk's adoration for Dongshan was unending. What? I love the juxtaposition here. Let's do a delusion banquet, undying. Let's celebrate. And the monks appreciated it. They saw what he was doing because they'd all been in this intimate, deep teacher-student relationship with him. And they happened to still be there. 7 days later, the food for the delusion banquet was prepared. Dongshan had a final meal with his congregation, and then he said his last words. "Don't make a big deal about it. When I pass away, don't go carrying on about it." We often note teachers' last words, great souls' last words. I love these last words of Dongshan. "Don't make a big deal about it." And then he returned to his room and sat upright in his Zazen posture, and he passed away. So I'll close this talk with repeating his words. "Don't make a big deal about it. Just this is it." Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Yes, thank you. Gather in. We got two people in the Zendo, which is fantastic. I'm going to get to you, but I really want to encourage those of you who are on the screen. A couple of you have raised your hands so far, but it's a little hard. There's more of us here in the temple. There's more of you there on Zoom, although I was with you on Zoom yesterday, and it was a delight. But really, take the step to raise your hands as well. And Corwin, you've started, so let's start with you.
Thank you, Melissa, for the talk. I've been having a very difficult session so far. My OCD is kicking in, and it's really bugging me. Like, no, that's not what it says in the officer's manual. And I'm trying to sit with that and try not to let that leak out and like affect other people. But also, to be honest, last night when Adam announced page 15, my heart fell. Because, and I feel always very blasphemous whenever I think this, because I absolutely hate this version of the Heart Sutra. And I've been sitting with that. And then I heard it was going to be here again. And I'm like, ugh, it's this one. But for the first time, in the reading we did today, I'm like, yeah, I can see how this relates to the one on page 14. I still don't like it. But you know, it's just funny to notice how, you know, I don't like this thing for whatever reason. I don't know why yet. And I'm also making up this story, like, I can't tell anyone because they're all going to be mad at me because this is James Ford's. And kind of like the story, like, well, you know, I'm annoyed and maybe that's leaking out. So probably all the other officers think I'm really just being a dick this time. And, you know, these stories that I make up and all about how you know, just awful I am. And meanwhile, I'm probably missing like all the stuff that I've screwed up too, which probably nobody really cares about because they don't affect anything. But it's just all these things that keep swirling up in my head and just sort of the negativity that breeds negativity. And it was just interesting as you were talking, just to realize how much of that has been going on in my head for the past, you know, day and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're really annoyed at you. Yeah, so James Ford, one of our great teachers, and the point is not, this comes out so much in all these stories about Don Shon, the point is not to mimic the teacher or to try to be the teacher or to approve of everything the teacher said or wrote. Right, but to look in that stream, and in your case, to see something that is true to Corwin. So if part of your way to that stream crossing is to really dislike that translation of the Heart Sutra, go for it.
Thanks, Carl. And
thank you for the talk. I sometimes worry that the best list that I turn to avoid constructed things is itself constructed. And I don't know how to get around. If everything is constructed, then just this is also, right?
Yeah. Well, so in our practice, there's always some grasping, right? We're always running a racket. And I think you're right to be suspicious of yourself. You in particular, and each one of you in particular, because we can move into a pure Zen where we imagine there is something, and it's always something, and whatever thing we think it is wrong, right? That whatever thing we think it is part of it. And yet, there is this possibility we're pointing to of some unconstructed, and maybe it's just a half a millisecond, right? And maybe it's more just to notice the easing and the constricting, you know, to notice how the mind sometimes works overdrive and takes over in some way. And that over these many hours of sitting, to just notice the suspicion arising, the longing arising, the ease arising, nothing is pure, nothing is permanent. I guess this instruction of hold it lightly.
Susan.
So, Melissa, you mentioned the teacher-student relationship. And as well, yesterday, David has spoken already about this. And I notice I get always nervous when this topic is arising, because for me, this is really, it's really a koan for a long period of time. And there was a lot of struggle with it. And I have a narrative that I belong to the really worse Zen students, and I'm listening to other teachers outside of Boundless Way Zen to Dharma talks. And a few weeks ago, I was listening to a talk from Rab Anderson. And he said something, which in that moment was, what? He said, there is no teacher, there is no student, and there is no enlightenment person. And I noticed that this sentence, all the weeks, is with me. And it is with me in terms of, you were talking about the construction business. So the construction business, which is going on over and over and over and over again, as well in terms of teacher-student relationship. And although Reb said this in terms of no teacher, no student, and so on, I know that I need teachers, and I need as well a primary teacher. So there is both. There is no teacher, and I need a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you just demonstrated the formulation of the Heart Sutra and Dongshan's teaching about thusness, which I could have talked about in a more abstract way, but I really like the way you just said it, because both are true. There's no you, there's no me, there's no Zen, there's no bird chirping outside the window. There's just what Dongshan struggled with in the Heart Sutra, the other version. The awful version. No, but for him, this was the awful version. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. What? No, wait, here it is, here it is. So it's this constant movement between really thusness. I love that translation of shunyata is the word that's translated as emptiness. Shunyata and the world of form, rupa. So it's back and forth and back and forth all the time until it isn't anymore. And then it comes together. And then there's something amazing that happens in that moment. David was just talking about these little moments, just a little in-between moment where you can not get stuck anymore in the construction of form or thusness. It's just this. And that, right? As Anne pointed out, another, it's all constructions. It's turtles all the way down in that story. Right? It's always like this. So you're pointing out the very thing that is true in all corners of our life, everywhere we go. Not this and this. Not me and me. I am not it and it is you. All these different formulations. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Will?
Can we have a delusion banquet for Corwin?
A delusion banquet for what?
For Corwin.
For Corwin? No, he's not dying. Well, he is, of course.
But, yeah. Are we already in one?
Yes. Yeah.
What is it? I mean, I love that phrase, but why do you need it?
What do you imagine he meant? There he was dying, and we're going to have a delusion banquet. Free associate.
Well, I guess, I mean, thinking about the sutra is illusion and enlightenment are not different. So that's a reason of a banquet. Or I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to put this in cultural context, and I think.
Well, we are having one at lunch today, so you can look into exactly what this delusion banquet is.
But, for me, there's something about, I hadn't really thought of this. You just, triggered something in me that delusions are not a problem. The construction business is not a problem. Skillful means of all kinds, just this is it. Not a problem, not a problem. Don't make a big deal out of it, as Dongshan would say. But it's delicious, because it's delicious. It's all delicious. Everything in life is like this. There are no exceptions. Even the horrible pain in some of our shoulders and legs and ankles and feet, I know specific people have these things. There's a quality when we get away from it should not be this way. It's kind of yummy. And don't believe that until you've tasted that first bite. Really felt the experience without any conditions around it. Even sorrow is like this. Anger is like this. It's to really enter into the moment as just this is it. There's a delicious quality. It's a banquet. And that's not meant to be a, what do you call it when you avoid there's a Zen term we use. I'm just spacing out on it.
Right? Bypass.
Yes, thank you. It's not meant to be a spiritual bypass, right? Even spiritual bypasses, though, are it. but it's actually meant to ignore the detour signs and go right for the heart of things. I can't deal with this pain. Well, this is reality right now. I can't deal with what's going on in the world. It's too much for me. But maybe I could taste a little bit of what it must be like for somebody in Ukraine right now, or somebody with monkeypox, or, you know, I could do that. I could do that. And it's beyond good and bad at that point. So one taste, some people say.
Just because it's there.
Yeah, because there's, yeah, what's the alternative? Right. You know, that's what, didn't W.C. Fields put that on his gravestone? I'd rather be in Philadelphia. You know, so we're here.
So something else about that delusion banquet, Will, is that, you know, Dongshan is dying. He's really dying. And there's this tradition of great Zen teachers knowing when their death is coming. Yeah. So he's not playing around. This isn't a trick. And he sees his students carrying on, and he says, okay, I'll give you one more week. It's just this amazing act of compassion. You know, he's ready to die. He's had this amazing long life, done all this teaching, and he almost steps back up out of his grave. You know, he stops his own dying process to give them a week to get all the ingredients together. And, you know, okay, let's throw a party about it. If this is how he's going to be. Mm-hmm. And so to think about this as his last teaching, this supplement, you know, okay, I guess you need one more bit of teaching from me, and this is what it's going to be. And that's how I would sit with that delusion banquet. What was he teaching them? Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Let's see. Barry, did you put your hand down?
Still muted.
You're still muted, although your hand did go back up.
I'm ambivalent about my comment, as you can tell by I don't unmute myself. I was really struck by your phrase during your talk about the encounter with the teacher being from me to emptiness. And to me, it just summed it up in such an incredibly brief way. And
you said there's a lot of noise on your line. An encounter with emptiness, is that what you said?
It was what you said, was that the encounter with the teacher is from me to emptiness. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but from what to emptiness?
We're missing one word. From what to emptiness?
From me to emptiness.
From me to emptiness.
Yes, that's what you said.
We'll have to replay it. Anyway, it's what you heard. What did you understand of that? What did you understand?
Well, it just struck me as such a fundamental summary of what it's all about. It was so terse and confined, but it contained it all. It was very striking for me. But I wanted to say one other thing. You talked about construction of narratives. Can you hear me?
There's a rumbling happening.
It's like there's somebody holding your microphone. It's your fan. Oh, okay. Yeah, try it anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'll
give it one more try.
Yeah.
But it occurs to me that we also construct images, and they're different than narratives. They have different ways of communicating or conveying. And, for example, it's one thing to describe sadness in words. It's another thing to show a self-portrait of Van Gogh. They convey things in very different ways, but they are equally profound, however variant.
Yeah, I think when we talk about the construction business, I think you're right to point out it's not just words, but the images and the words and the feelings and the whole thing are part of both the constructed reality and the real reality. Honoring all of this that arises.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks for making that effort. and I saw some hands here. Seth?
I was really stopped by the...
Can you hear him?
There is that phrase when
a little louder.
Someone says to someone, what do they say? They say, but if you leave, it'll be hard to see.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to figure out why. There's no one in my life that left like that. But I'm very moved.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't even know the details of the story. I'm imagining it's a teacher and a student, you know? They're both, okay, it's the enlightened delusion. You can never be separated, but also he's expressing the dark love right here. I don't want you to go.
Yeah. Well, Zeph, I so appreciate you bringing us into this place, into this coming and going. The response to coming and going is not, oh, that's fine, right? But we're encouraged to love what we love. And when we part, when we leave something, when we lose something, the monks were right to be wailing and weeping when the teacher died. It's not that that was wrong. And this is the Dharma, these tears and this expression. I don't want you to go. It will be hard to see each other. And then Dongshan's reply was, it will be hard not to see each other, right? Both these sides, but it's not that one cancels the other out. And we're encouraged in the fullness of this, both the sadness and the oneness, both so important. And also, we don't need to understand what's going on, right? And especially as we sit, as we go through retreat, we can make up story. Well, I'm sad because, or I shouldn't be sad because, but when sadness arises, then there's just sadness and letting this be complete, not having to psychologize it or find sources in the moment. It is not your sadness you are feeling, whatever is going on for you, whatever pain, whatever confusion, in some ways, don't take it personally.
Just business.
Just what?
Just business.
Just business.
The business of the Dharma.
The business of the Dharma.
It is working you. That's the Dharma is doing you exactly right. Yeah.
You know, and I just want to say, Zeph, that your expression of this quality of feeling touched is very different from those of us who sit around and think, I've got to say something that's really dharmic, and it's got to sound wonderful. Just show off how we're not interested in those kinds of comments. You know, we this is exactly what I was talking about in the talk, this kind of meeting. You met the whole room and the Zoom room through the authenticity of your feeling. That's really, I bow to that. Thank you. Esther, you get to follow.
Yes. Well, then I, you know, first of all, thank you for the talk. And just now is arising when the version we heard yesterday about passing the stream and seeing something. I really appreciated that. It wasn't seeing himself, but seeing something. Mm-hmm. And for me, what arose, not quite clear what he saw, but something was sensed. And what I really wanted, what I was very touched by in the talk today, was this description of first the delusion banquet and then the extra week, as Alan said. You know, he found in him another week in some way to stay around and and teach or just be with the students. And then the moment where he then goes to his room and sits in Zazen and dies. There was just something, you know, this student-teacher relationship, this deep devotion and commitment. And, you know, in my life right now, one teacher is dying. It's a 5-year anniversary of another teaching that died. Very real and very physical. And at the same time, they're fully with me. One has not been here long, another one is slipping away. But, and it's hard to say what the exchange is. There's still an exchange. There's still, yeah, a stream of some sort. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I saw another hand. Brad, did you have something?
I just wanted to maybe have you say a little more about how there's a different me with each teacher. That seems quite true.
Then you need to say what it is.
I cherish the diversity for one thing. It seems like each teacher nudges me in another way I need it. And without the three, or might there be 10 eventually, I wouldn't get nudged, you know. I would sit there as the same version of me over and over and over. So it's very grateful to her, this boundless way style.
Yeah.
Well, and we often talk about the value of hearing the Dharma expressed by different people. So you don't think, oh, I need to try to be more like, you know, this one person. You hear, oh, it sounds this way, it sounds that way. And I love this turning around of, oh yeah, you get to see who you are. You know, in some ways in Dokusan, we're reflecting, we're meeting and reflecting. So you get to know these different sides, the David side of Brad, right? And then there's the Melissa side, and then there's the Alan. And of course, every interaction is like that with everything. You get to experience the traffic sound side of Brad, the knees in pain side of Brad. So everything we encounter is preaching the Dharma and seeing ourselves.
But the big difference is coming to Dokusan is coming to an encounter in a way that I don't anywhere else.
Exactly.
So what the hell am I doing in all those other encounters? No, for one thing. And what a cherished opportunity to be able to have this type of encounter.
Well, and you know, as I'm thinking about you and Jeannie and David and me, who all worked with this other teacher, we used to joke that there were a bunch of him. Because sometimes he was one way in a Dokusan, and sometimes he was another way. And I think even if it was only one of us doing the primary teaching, we're always different too, moment to moment. So it's kind of this unexpected, it's a dance really of selfing. It's a dance of selfing. And you can quote me on that, Barry. there's no fixed self. So even if David appears to be the same person all the time, he isn't. He can't be. It's impossible. Human beings aren't like that. So to enter the Dokusan room is making a decision to enter into a great mystery. And that learning how to do that does translate into relationships with other people. Mm-hmm. Then you're not saying, oh, it's my wife again, or it's it's my boss again. It's like, who is this? Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to add, Brad, that, you know, absolutely, this Dokusan encounter is really special and unlike most encounters that you have. And you wouldn't want to try to turn every encounter into one and drive all your friends and family crazy. And sometimes it does just happen by chance, you know, and our koans actually tell some of those stories where there's a chance encounter with someone who's not set themselves up as a teacher and something happens and your life is changed. So just, you know, being open to that as well, because it does happen.
So maybe I think we have time just for one last person, and Matt just raised his hand, but maybe we'll have two people and Jenny will have the last word. Matt.
Thanks for the talk. I'm really sort of taken with this delusion banquet. That just, I wasn't expecting that. And I'm sort of sitting with the, you know, delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. You know, sort of these vows that are have this absolutism about them and impossibility about them, and juxtaposing that with let's have a banquet of, you know, and I don't know, are we feasting on delusions? Are we feasting in honor of delusions? Are we just, you know, I don't know. I'm just sort of sitting with that. It's very, it's an interesting juxtaposition, those two things.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I think of the parent who catches their kid stealing a cookie and makes them eat the whole cookie jar and they get sick. Go for it.
I think that's the perfect allusion to this illusion bank. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, and that delusions are not separate from Dharma gates. And many a Zen student has vowed to enter all delusions. Delusions are endless. I vow to enter them. And so this is, delusion, Dharma gate, just words. Yeah.
Thanks, Matt. And Jenny, last word.
I was angry this morning, and I was sitting here angry and feeling it and watching it like a turbulent river. And I realized I was digging it a little bit. And then I went in the kitchen and I carried it into the kitchen, and then I realized I didn't want it in the kitchen with the knives. and I just realized that I was digging it and that I was building this thing that just helped it go. Yeah.
That was your delusion banquet, Jim.
Yeah. And you didn't have to eat it.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks, everybody. Let's come back into our posture for Zazen.